This is Encounter on VOA. Here's Carol Castillo.
Welcome to Encounter on the Voice of America. I'm Rick Pantaleo, sitting in for Carol Castiel. The United States District Court for Central District of California recently ordered tech giant Apple to provide what it calls reasonable technical assistance to law enforcement agents in obtaining access to the data that's been locked in an iPhone used by one of the shooters in the December 2015 San Bernardino attacks. In an open letter to its customers, Apple CEO Tim Cook called the federal court order an unprecedented step which threatens the security of Apple customers. Cook says that Apple opposes the order and that it has implications far beyond the legal case at hand. White House Press Secretary Josh Earnest said that the U.S. Department of Justice is not asking Apple to redesign its product nor to create a new backdoor to one of their products. A number of other tech companies and related organizations are in support of Apple's position in this case, while numerous U.S. politicians, including some presidential candidates, have criticized Apple's rejection of the court order. Today on Encounter, we'll take a look at this conflict between Apple and the U.S. Department of Justice and the various implications that impact both sides of the issue. We'll also touch upon the ongoing discussion of privacy rights versus national security in general. Joining me in studio to discuss this topic is Morgan Wright, a recognized expert on international cybersecurity and U.S. law enforcement, as well as the CEO of Morgan Wright Cyber Strategies, a consultancy located in Washington, D.C., that works with companies and government agencies on cybersecurity issues. Joining us from Los Angeles at the University of Southern California is Clifford Newman, an expert in computer security, director of the USC Center for Computer System Security, senior project leader of the USC Information Sciences Institute, and an associate research professor of computer science at USC's Viterbi School of Engineering. Welcome to both you gentlemen.
Thanks for having us on. This is going to be fun.
Yes, thank you.
I guess the best way to start things off, who would like to give us a good overview on the dispute between Apple and the DOJ? Morgan?
For me, it's very clear. There is an order in place issued by a court of competent jurisdiction. It was given to Apple. In that order, Apple has the right to appeal it. They're in the appeals process. If it is ruled against Apple, it's very clear. Tim Cook has to comply with the order. Period. I mean, we'll get into some of the technical issues or some of the philosophical issues, but to me, at the end of the day, if they don't comply, if they say, well, it still doesn't matter, we refuse to do it, then what happens with banks when they don't want to comply with lawful orders? What happens when we have a child who's been kidnapped? What happens if we have a bank robbery, a fugitive on the run, drug runners? I mean, this isn't just about terrorism. I understand some of the issues they're talking about, but to me, it's very clear. At the end of the day, it's the rule of law, and if the rule of law does not prevail, we're a nation of laws, then they, Apple, start to undercut the fabric of what we're here for.
Cliff, any comments?
I think that's accurate from the legal perspective. There are quite a number of other debates that are going on, not all of which are directly relevant to this particular case, yet it happens to be the arguments that are being made by Apple and by others. So I think it's important to dissect some of those issues. One of those issues is the longer term issue of whether the government should be able to force cell phone manufacturers and providers to insert backdoors into new phones that are sold. Now, that is not the particular issue with this case, but it is the issue that Apple seems to be trying to argue. Let me sort of dispense with that first by just saying, you know, from the perspective of a technologist, I think it is a bad idea to force the insertion of these backdoors into devices for a couple of reasons. One, when you design flaws into the security of a system, eventually criminals are able to figure out how to exploit those. You also have the issue of individuals within government that are otherwise authorized access in certain instances from being able to abuse those backdoors in other non-authorized instances. And finally, the argument of foreign governments wanting a level playing field comes into play. Now, that having been said, the issue in this case is not about the creation of a backdoor. Apple has argued that the federal government is asking them to create a backdoor, but that backdoor already exists in the phone. It exists because Apple failed in its attempts to create a phone to which even Apple would not have access to the data. There was a flaw in their reasoning. not an unexpected flaw, because this is very hard to get right, but that allows one to sideload new versions of software, which can then defeat some of those security mechanisms. So in this particular matter, it's not about creating a backdoor, but allowing the government or allowing those that are in need of the information to exploit that vulnerability to access the data. From an ethical perspective, I believe Apple should be complying with that request.
Morgan, most computer, mobile technology, software, aren't most of the products written these days written with a backdoor?
Well, let's kind of define what a backdoor is first. A backdoor is when something has been engineered either because you want to or because you've been forced to, but it's universally accessible into the product. Actually, we're finding out now products from some companies that had such a serious flaw is that they were concerned as whether or not they were introduced by a nation state, a state actor like a China or a Russian, to allow them universal access. When Apple upgraded their security on the phones to go to limit the number of attempts to 10, and then increase the time between each attempt so that on the 10th one it would, you know, blow up your data. That was done through a process that Apple could push out an update. The phone would recognize, hey, this comes from Apple, and then it updated the firmware that was on there to allow this to happen. So, yeah, in a sense, there are things built in that allow you recovery of a password on certain things, allow you to recover your data. So I wouldn't necessarily call these backdoors, but there are mechanisms to manage things. I think in this case what they're trying to get at and what Tim Cook, I think, is doing a little bit disingenuously is conflating a backdoor with a technical bypass mechanism that allows the FBI to get to the phone. Now, trust me, and Clifford would probably agree with this too, the government would love nothing more than to have a backdoor and stuff. I remember in the days of NSA, and they were talking about the Clipper chip, the Skipjack algorithm. They wanted everybody to use it. Why? Because it would give the NSA a backdoor into it. Even though I'm a law and order guy, I'm a former cop, I used to teach computer crime, taught the FBI for a year, you know, I think this is the right thing to do. I still would not want to have somebody have such access to my phone that I'm less worried about my government. I am worried about them, but I'm more worried about the Russians and the Chinese and the North Koreans and the Iranians. That's where, from a national security standpoint and traveling overseas, I think we run into some really significant issues.
And actually, if you point that out, it's actually an interesting mind game to consider whether, for example, our foreign intelligence agencies might already have this kind of access, because in order to create the new software that can be loaded on these phones, Apple would need to sign that piece of code. Now, there have been instances where foreign intelligence services have broken into large companies to try to access just that kind of data. Mm-hmm. A few years ago, we had an example with RSA. There was an example with a certification authority in the Netherlands. So for all we know, you know, the particular key needed to sign this code could have already been compromised through black bag kinds of techniques at these organizations, whereas the legal authority for the U.S. to do that doesn't actually exist. So, you know, the foreign intelligence services may have a leg up on us in this one.
And actually, there's one interesting twist to that, too. Recently, Apple had one of its first instances of malicious software that made it onto the iTunes store, the App Store. Why? Because this happened in China, actually. It's because somebody figured out on the developer software how to insert code into the development software, which then they figured out how it would bypass or how it would get Apple to sign it. So somebody was smart enough to think, hey, let's go attack the software that the developers are using, stick the backdoor in there. Let's not try and stick the backdoor in the app itself. So there are smart people, as Tom Ridge said when he was at Office of Homeland Security before it became DHS. He said, the good guys, we have to be right 100% of the time. The bad guys, they only got to get lucky once. And in this case, there are millions of apps, you know, on the iTunes store. Clifford's point, we have no idea if all of those are legit. I mean, we assume they are, but we have no idea.
If Apple was to acquiesce to the demands of the court order and give the Department of Justice, the FBI, what they want, could this potentially backfire and make the bad guys get access to the same kind of tools?
In this case, I don't think that's going to happen. What was requested was a particular piece of software that would be signed by Apple and that worked only on that particular phone. Someone else, if they were going to apply this on a different phone, would need a similar piece of software with a change to it, but it too would require the signature by Apple. Now, of course, if that code had, or if the key needed to do that signature had already gotten out, then that really makes no difference in this particular case whether Apple helped. So if Apple helps here, it's not creating that toolkit that others are able to use on other phones.
And one other thing about that, too, is I hear the arguments that, well, if Apple does this for us, the next thing it'll be China, next thing it'll be Russia. I've got news for a lot of folks. China already, they proposed, it kind of got pushed back, but they were the first ones to propose that if you want to do business in our country, you've got to escrow your software with us so we can look at it to make sure, quote, and I'm using my fingers here as air quotes, you know, there are no bad things in this code. Well, that's just subterfuge. And they just want a way to get to your code so that they can insert things into it. So this whole thing about, well, if they do it, then China – look, China and Russia do what they want. They're not waiting for Apple to determine if China wants to – and the reason – and here's another dirty little secret. We already believe, and there's reports out there that says Apple is already cooperating with China in terms of the code because that's a billion people. That's revenue. That's more users. That's more iPhones sold.
It's a large market.
Large market. So, look – here's the moral issue, and we were talking about this before we went on air. I mean, and this is another piece to frame it. Would we be having this discussion if 14 Apple employees were dead and 22 were seriously wounded on the Cupertino campus, one infinite loop in Apple? Would Tim Cook still come out and make the same statement he did and fight the government on this order? So the question is, if you argue, yes, he would do it, then fine, he's a man of principle, I get it, then we'll let the courts decide. But if it's no, then it's all about economics and it's about the market. It's nothing to do with the phone.
Specifically, looking at what the FBI is requesting, let's get a good idea of what that is. Morgan, can you explain what is it that the FBI really wants and what don't they want?
It's easier to tell you what they do want, you know, or what don't they want. But that order is only asking for three things, three very specific things. Number one is help us get by the passcode on the front of the phone, because after 10 attempts, boom, your data's gone. Number two, allow us access to the phone through a mechanism, whether it's USB or Bluetooth or whatever it might be, so that they can run their computer with a dictionary and all these different passwords loaded against it to try and guess what the password is. And if it's a four-digit one, you know, and it's only numbers, there's only 10,000 possible combinations, this thing will be open before we know it, right? And then the third thing they want is don't limit the number of attempts. The security on Apple's passcode feature limits the number of attempts. So before you have your final attempt, there's like an hour between it. So they're only asking for three things. Number one, get us past the passcode. Number two, let us hook up to the phone to run our computer. And number three, make the only limitation is the speed of the hardware, nothing else.
And one of the questions has come up legally is how much work is the government actually imposing on Apple? And Apple's claiming that they're being asked to write a whole new piece of software. Really, that's not the case. They already have the software mechanism in place to generate new versions of software. What they really need to do, at least with respect to two of those items, is comment out about five lines of code. So it's not a significant amount of work. It would probably take a couple of days at most. The third of those requirements, actually creating a new interface in order to guess the passwords through USB, that probably does require a little bit more work. But there are actually easier ways to accomplish that, where the code could be inserted that would actually guess them inside the system itself instead of having to come from another computer.
You're listening to Encounter on the Voice of America. My guests are cybersecurity experts Morgan Wright, CEO of Morgan Wright Cyber Strategies, a consultancy located in Washington, D.C., and Clifford Newman, an associate research professor of computer science at the University of Southern California and director of the university's Center for Computer System Security. Today, we're talking about the dispute between tech giant Apple and the U.S. Department of Justice, as well as cyber privacy rights versus national security. We're going to have more of our program after this.
News is mobile, and so are you. Get VOA on the go. Get VOA on Google Currents. Get VOA News specifically made for your tablet and smartphone. Clean, simple, fast. Now available for Android or Apple phones or tablets. Download the Google Currents app for free today. Get VOA on Google Currents at voanews.com/currents.
Back to our program, and we were talking a little earlier about what actually is being asked of Tim Cook. Why is he taking this stance? Why is Apple taking this stance?
Well, I think there are a couple of questions here. There's sort of what is the claimed reason that they are taking this stance, and that is that he's trying to claim that he's concerned about the privacy of the other iPhone users. But really, that argument is more to do with what has been on the surface about the creation of backdoors and not this particular incident. some have argued that really what he is trying to do is get some marketing advantage in this particular case. Back in September of 2014, Tim Cook announced changes that were being made to the way that Apple used data, as well as, so there they were trying to distinguish their privacy policies and the protection of privacies from, for example, what Google does with data. The second thing that they declared at this time was the creation of the encryption component within the iPhone such that, and as he claimed then, not even Apple would be able to access your data. Clearly, they failed in implementing that because there is this vulnerability that allows the loading of the additional software to bypass some of those. And I think that he is trying to present the posture that, well, no, we're really still trying to provide that level of assurance, whereas technically that doesn't exist in the iPhone 5C.
Morgan, we heard about all the tech giants like Google, Facebook, and so forth backing up Apple on this position. One major giant who isn't is Bill Gates.
Yeah, I read some of that interview, and it kind of looked like from this morning he was walking that back a little bit. But let's kind of dissect that a little bit, too. I think one of the issues, and kind of take Tim Cook, you know, why is he, to expound on Clifford's thing, I think part of it is too, so at the end of the day, when he raises his hand and says, okay, we have to do it, he can show everybody we didn't work with the government willingly. It's an issue of trust with people around the world. In a post-Edward Snowden era, even though it was lawful, a lot of people didn't like what the NSA did with the intercepts and breaking into data centers and breaking certain kinds of encryption. So the other thing, though, too, here is these other giants, to them, they're looking at it, too, from a branding standpoint. I think it's a market access standpoint. They don't want to look as though they're collaborating with the government. After 9/11, I live just outside Washington, D.C. here in Loudoun County. You had AT&T, you had Verizon, a lot of people who were cooperating with the government on the collection of metadata, of lawful intercepts, things like that. And when it came out, they had to be provided immunity so that they wouldn't be prosecuted for some of the stuff they did, because technically it might have been illegal. So I think what they're playing this long game, which is that, look, we've got to protect our market interests by fighting this order. Now, look, if they win, they win. That's the American system. The FBI has to figure out another way around. That's up to them. But I think the reason you've got Google, you've got all these other folks doing it, is because they don't want to set a precedent either that they're going to have to do something for the government. If they do, they do. Now, interesting, one thing I did hear about why Bill Gates might have done it, Bill Gates still owns a lot of stock in Microsoft, and Apple is a competitor. So
I always thought there's always been some conflict between Apple and Microsoft. I mean, this goes back decades. The thing I'm curious about, the actual encryption that Apple is using on its new system now, do each of the iPhone releases, now we've had the original iPhone all the way up through, I guess we're at Apple i6, I guess the iPhone 6 is the latest to come out.
And then to just add on that, you have the iPhone version, the hardware, and then the software up to iOS 9. So, you know, yeah, two of those things play together, the hardware and the software.
Comments on that, Cliff?
Well, there are differences in the hardware in terms of where these keys are stored. Some of the newer phones have what's called a secure element that provides some stronger isolation in there. Some of those things could be utilized to provide stronger protection so that, for example, future versions of phones might not have this backdoor or might not have this vulnerability. So that's something to be considered. You know, in my view, the correct behavior for Apple would be to simply acknowledge this vulnerability exists, that they have, in my view, a moral obligation to help in this particular matter, but then they can go in and they can design the future versions of the phones to prevent this particular vulnerability that was being exploited. And that gets to the other backdoor issue, the one where, you know, I think that they should not be installing new backdoors into the phones that are distributed to others.
Morgan, before we went on the air, we were talking a little bit about this issue, and you brought up something that piqued my interest, the Edward Snowden effect you mentioned. Yep. Tell us about that.
First of all, I'm just going to be clear and go on record. Edward Snowden's a traitor. You know, I know a lot of people, civil libertarians, are going to go, well, he exposed what was going on. Well, he also social engineered password out of 19 other NSA ploys. He illegally obtained information and shared it. That being said, the fact that it's out there, you deal with the world as you find it, not as you wish it was. So in the world that we find it, the revelations of Edward Snowden, what he did, showed the extent and capability of our intelligence community, of our law enforcement efforts, how we're getting data. And one of the reasons we're having this discussion, and Apple is trying to improve their encryption, and so is Google, and so is Microsoft, is because they found out how easily the NSA was breaking into their stuff. And they didn't want to be a part of that. I mean, I get privacy, and they want to protect it. I certainly want my privacy protected, but I think had it not been for Edward Snowden's revelations, a lot of these discussions would have not surfaced the way they did, because sometimes The only time you oil something is when it becomes squeaky, you know, right? Mm-hmm. So I want to get rid of that. Nobody was complaining about it at that point. In fact, up until iOS 7, the software version, Apple, in their law enforcement manual, which is still online right now as we speak, tells that if you want to bypass the passcode, send it to us. We'll do it for you. Send us the phone. Tell us what you want. Give us a drive that's twice the size of the hard drive on there or a thumb drive, and we'll send you back the data. So I think this is a reaction from a market standpoint because it did hurt Apple and other people in these other countries when they say, do you cooperate with the government? It did impact sales. It did impact market access. And that was all the revelations of Snowden.
One of the things that Apple has brought up in recent days was the fact that someone, whether it was the FBI or someone from the San Bernardino County government, changed the password or tried to change the password on the iPhone.
So what happened there was that they disclosed that someone had tried to change the password on the iCloud account. So this was the account to which data was being backed up. But prior to that, the phone in question had actually stopped backing up data anyway. Now, Apple has argued that the fact that that iCloud account password had been changed has prevented the phone from uploading data in a manner where it could then be accessed. But in fact, had Apple been asked to reset the password back shortly after it had been changed, that could have been accomplished because at least the quote, hashed password that was available for that particular account would have been in Apple's backups. As to whether it is at this point, I don't know.
In the past, Apple, along with other major tech companies, have provided a similar assistance to law enforcement agencies. What makes this particular case so different? Morgan? Well,
there's a law out there called the Communications Assistance to Law Enforcement Act, CALEA. And it mandates that certain companies, and these are telecommunications, have to cooperate with law enforcement on what, especially at the federal level, things called Title III, lawful intercepts. I don't think there is anything different about this case. I think what people are doing is they're trying to say that was iOS 8 or that was iOS 7 or, you know, that was an iPhone 5. This is different because it's an iPhone or it's an iOS 9 and it's a different version and we do encryption differently. But as Clifford actually brilliantly pointed out, it's Apple's fault. That's the way they built it, so that the fact that the FBI has access to it is not the fault of the FBI. That's Apple's. Now, if they solve it and it truly becomes there's no way to do it, then this issue becomes moot.
Looking at the way that this is coming about, I understand that Apple was filing papers this week. I'm sure the DOJ is doing the same thing. And I understand the next step is a hearing on March the 22nd. Cliff?
Well, that from the legal perspective, but yeah, there will be a hearing at some point. One of the things I heard was that Apple's claim, at least one of their arguments, is that being forced to update the software on the phone would violate their First Amendment rights. I actually find that a little bit humorous.
Yeah, because the courts have previously ruled that the software code right now is not a freedom of expression issue, so it's not a free speech issue. But again, courts can change their mind. California, you know, at a level of court can make a different ruling. And this is one of those things that could end up in the Supreme Court. And the fact that Justice Scalia died, you know, and there's only 8 justices, this is one of the issues that could shape even a hearing of a potential judge coming in. Now you have to be technology-based. You have to have a technical understanding of what's going on, because this will be a tremendous issue if it ever gets to the Supreme Court.
Okay, we're just about out of time, so I'm going to ask each of you to don on your magic robes and get out the crystal balls here. Morgan, tell us how you think this is going to play out.
At the end of the day, I think Apple's going to have to comply. I think the interests are compelling. It's national security. It's 14 dead U.S. citizens, the deadliest terrorist attack since 9/11. And if somebody wants to get into a marketing war, I think 14 dead U.S. citizens, 22 seriously wounded, is going to outmarket Apple's branding exercise at this point. So at the end of the day, I think the government wins.
Cliff?
I think that Apple should comply. As to whether they will be compelled to, will play out in the courts. Certainly if the courts finally rule that they need to comply, Apple will. I think that longer term, we need to have the debate with respect to potential backdoors. I'm opposed to that, but there are a lot of individuals that are in favor of that. There was legislation introduced in New York State, legislation introduced in California to require just that, and there has been suggestions of legislation at the federal level.
And I think with that, we're out of time. And I want to thank both of you for joining me today. Morgan Wright, who is cybersecurity expert and CEO of Morgan Wright Cyber Strategy, a consultancy located here in Washington, D.C., and Clifford Newman, who, along with being a cybersecurity expert, is an associate research professor of computer science at the University of Southern California in Los Angeles, and he's director of the university's Center for Computer Security. Again, thank you, gentlemen, for joining me today. Very nice discussion.
Thank you.
Encounter was produced in Washington, and we'd like to thank Anna Zaleski for booking our guests. Our engineer was Rob McLean. I'm Rick Pantaleo, sitting in for Carol Castiel. Be sure to join us again next week for another Encounter on the Voice of America.